And I'm going to have you set up and then admit all.
Okay. So by setting up.
So by setting up, you can just leave this screen up.
Okay.
And when we're ready to go, then you can flip over to the share screen.
Okay.
So let's.
Just testing it.
Okay, sure. That's fine.
And then, oops. We should go back. All right, stop share.
Okay.
So we're recording up.
Yeah, let's admit all, because it's 11:50.
Admit all. Hi, everybody. Is there anything that you need me to? Looks like everybody's muted.
Yeah, no, that's what
Michelle's connecting her audio.
I would go ahead and admit Michelle. Sometimes they come in as, on the right-hand side.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, admit, because they have some projections.
Gotcha.
In different ways, maybe the same, I'm assuming.
Okay. So,
hey. Can you hear us, everybody? Thumbs up.
Yeah. Can you hear us? Great.
Isn't this cool?
Do I need to project more? I don't know.
Let's let Fred Moore in.
Yes.
I can hear you fine, Brendan.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to mute until you get going.
Terrific. I appreciate it.
There's nobody in there yet. Again, so it's let in.
Okay.
So we'll just sit and let people in for a couple more minutes, and when George comes in, we'll get that going.
Great.
So you're driving. You're okay with that?
Yeah.
Over there? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
We have, was it 40?
43, yeah.
43, okay.
Yeah, because Kristen Domensky called and said, yeah, I think I can make it. So I sent her the link about an hour and a half ago. So, yeah, we'll see. And some want the recording. I think Frank Kaufman actually signed up, but
he was
the recording for later because he had a conflict come up. So, yeah.
You said that's a pain to get CLE from recordings.
Well, it's the maintenance of it. So what happens is I have to record that every month, whether somebody for 2 years. Whether somebody is involved in it or not.
Oh, wow.
So I just chose, okay, we're not going to do a whole bunch of that. So,
well, and then what happens if you're out or something?
Yeah, and there's time frames. So if they watch it in February, I have to record it before the end of February kind of thing. And so if I miss that, I can have them watch it again, but it's kind of a pain, for March.
Sure.
And then record it in March. So it's just one of those things.
Well, I remember there was a CLA, I forget. It was the state of the circuit, updated state of the circuit.
Yeah.
I had either court or a meeting that ran along.
Sure.
And so I wasn't able to get in on it until like 12:15 and you let me in, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't care about the CLE, but I was at least able to watch the 10 minutes or whatever
content
I missed. Yeah. But the rest of it, I got. So
good.
So there are two?
Let's
you've got
Rhonda
two.
In.
Oh.
And
yeah.
Then we're going to have to wait for George to come in and
sure.
Stuff. So anyway, Rhonda Glenn. So at about 11:55 or so.
GW. 11:50 is 11:53.
Yeah.
It's bugging me.
You know what? I'll start at like I think 11:57.
Okay.
And then George will.
I think we have time. I don't know how many questions we'll get during it, of course, and then we can certainly go on about other things.
We have this room actually until about 1:45, so if it goes a little longer, if you have the time.
Sure. I'm happy to answer any questions I can,
because
it's so confusing, and then you have the emergency regulations, but then you have the already standing regulations for communicable disease, and it can get
overlapped.
A little bit choppy, yeah.
So those other folks that you let in, I gotta like.
Oh, I'm sorry. We can go through.
Okay. I need to. Can you scroll down?
Yeah.
Hey, Mary. This is George. Hey.
Hi, George.
Hi, George.
Brendan, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Good.
Good.
Thanks for doing the program today.
What's that?
Thanks for doing the program today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'll explain, but it occurred to me that others might be able to benefit from a lot of the research I did and everything, and if that's the case, great.
So as we go on, you'll have to hit the waiting room, let people in. So can you scroll down a little bit?
Sure.
Let me see.
So we're at the bottom now.
Okay.
You want me to bring them out to you?
No, I got it. Yeah. Just scroll up now. If
okay.
You can. Let me see what's so, Henderson and Whaley. George, we'll start with a few announcements and whatnot at about 11:57, and then I'll hand it over to you if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Mr. Horv is joining.
Thank you.
So did you get the last two as well as Mr. Horv?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm getting better at this, you know? Practice makes perfect with all of this, so.
Is there any way to save a list of the people or reference a list?
I'm thinking as we record,
okay.
It should be able to. And I've done screenshots before when I sit here on a laptop, but since I don't have a laptop access today, I can't do that.
Okay.
And then I have an initial starting point anyway. And then I let people just tell me what it is that they've, you know, how much time they participated in, and
sure.
Clarify it for me.
Sure.
Now, normally I would have, you know, the signage and everything to go in and get to see people face to face. That's the fun part for
yeah,
me.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, I miss those. I just put over a note to Second Press to see how they're doing this morning. I haven't heard back from them. Told them we missed them and hoping
eventually. They're not open for anything?
And that's my question.
Okay.
I was asking. And it may be that they do open, but only limit for a certain amount. And then they wouldn't be able to, I don't know how they would serve food.
Oh, it's Michelle again. Michelle and Tim Kelly.
Yeah. Michelle must be having connection issues. That's okay.
Yeah, it looks like she's in now.
That's good. Yeah, I miss working with them. They're a group of nice people. And
did you get Alan?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, the folks at Second Press have always been just really nice, very always pleasant, always decent, everything, and it just a good group of folks.
Yeah.
And it's nearby.
Yeah,
which
people
is really
can
convenient.
Walk local, you know,
right.
Slow times.
The food may not be to everybody's liking, but
when I hear about that.
Yeah.
Some people think it's better than mashed potatoes, and other people will think, you know, dorm food.
Sure. Sure.
So it just depends.
There's Alan and Maggie Rhodes.
Okay.
I don't know if Alan's having connection issues or not. It's like we've got everybody in.
Okay.
11:57.
Okay. Anybody else in the waiting room up above?
No, I don't see anybody in the waiting room.
Okay. Greetings, everybody. Thumbs up if you can see me for those that have their audio on. That's George Greg Mahurl. Okay, good deal. Please keep yourself muted for the presentation time so we don't get any background music. And then if you have any questions, you're welcome to submit those questions using the chat function. Admit all of the guys. And
okay.
Then Judge Foley will be monitoring the questions. And Brendan will explain in further details how he'll address those as we go. We have this room until 1:30, so we are more than willing to stay a little bit after if we need to. And please, if you would, welcome George Wood, your 188th McLean County Bar Association president. George.
Wow, I didn't realize I was the 188th.
You are. I just counted that this morning, yeah.
Well, thanks to all the 187 that came before me. Our speaker today, you all know, it's Brendan. He's managing partner of Johnson Law Group. I didn't realize you're managing partner. Congratulations!
I
know that
deal.
Just means you get to do all the fun stuff, right?
Right, you bet.
Yeah, headquartered in Bloomington. I also didn't know you guys have offices in Springfield, Peoria, and Decatur. Good deal.
Yeah, yeah. All over.
And you're an Illinois boy. So, born and raised. So, his bio is also attached. So, I'm not just going to read it. I'd rather get to the material. But he's going to talk about something that he's done a significant amount of research on, as he's indicated, and knows about. And he's going to enlighten us today on this topic. So, with that, please welcome Brendan.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. Thank you, George. A little bit intimidated that George thinks everybody knows me, but maybe that's for better or worse. I don't know. Emily is being admitted now.
Yeah.
I might not start the slideshow just yet, just because we still have some late joiners. That said, this started because for my own firm, a lot of administrative rules have been passed. Some emergency administrative rules have been passed. We all know everything going on with COVID, so we're not going to be discussing a lot of the statistical issues, and there's certainly not anything political with this. Fundamentally, the concern with this meeting, Julia Davis, fundamentally the concern with this seminar or hour-long program is ways that your firm can be in compliance with the rules and regulations that you need to be in compliance with for COVID, and information for your clients and your clients' businesses so that they can be in compliance as well. All of that is important, and with the administrative rules and the cross-referencing different things, that can be very complex. And in order to make sure that you catch everything and that you are in compliance, and not all of those rules are 100%. So I think we've got our last person joining, and if it's okay with everybody, we'll get started here. One thing I did want to cover as far as questions before we do get going, please type your questions. Judge Foley is monitoring those, and my intention is that if somebody has a question, I'll be interrupted. I'm happy, normally if we were doing this in person, I'd tell you to raise your hands, but she's going to let me know if somebody has a question. I'm happy to answer them. We obviously are on a little bit of a schedule. I know not everyone can go until 1:30. I'm happy staying late to talk with folks past 1 o'clock, but my goal is to get through all of the material by 1 o'clock. If it looks like we're running a little bit late with questions, then we might just suspend those to the end. And I have my information down as well for people who might wanna email me questions later. Please do so, I encourage you to do so. Any follow-ups or anything else.
For the chat function, make sure you address it to everyone, not just Judge Foley, but just send it to everyone if you would.
Please, yes, addressing your questions to everybody is going to make a big difference, especially as far as being able to make sure that we get all your questions answered. Okay. All right, with that, we'll get going here. And here, obviously, we all know the title, and we've given it kind of an introduction already. As far as just waking up the keyboard, if it'll work with me, guys, is it working? I don't see it changing.
Click there and try.
Okay. Well, so what we'll cover, we'll go into a little bit of an introduction beyond what I already said. We'll go through some of the requirements that you and your firm, that is, as well as your clients' businesses, have to comply with. Then we'll discuss enforcement and the parts of enforcement. And then we'll discuss some additional measures that you could use in order to protect your firm or your client's business. As far as then the introduction. So as I mentioned, the Illinois Department of Public Health passed some emergency rules just last month. We wanted to get this CLE in regarding those emergency rules as soon as possible. And so this is the earliest we could do it. The last set of those rules was passed on August 7th, and they're effective until January 4th of next year. And that's if they're not extended. So that's something to keep in mind. These are things we have to plan to comply with for the foreseeable future. I doubt that any of this is going to change. We will cover those requirements. We will cover the investigation and enforcement, and we are going to cover additional measures to help prevent any problems. We're not going to be covering rules specific to schools or medical facilities or personnel. My thinking behind that was that if you are a salaried attorney working for a hospital, you certainly have more rules than just the Illinois Department of Public Health emergency regulations or their standing administrative code with which your facility needs to comply. Similar with schools, so hope everybody is okay with that. Obviously for the CLE, we do assume everybody's familiar with everything. I do use the term mask throughout. Mask refers to a face covering, whether it's a literal mask, the way we think of a mask, or it's a cloth face covering that covers your nose and mouth. When I refer to the term department, when I refer to the term department, I'm referring to the Illinois Department of Public Health. Frequently when I reference the department, it's not just, especially in the investigation and enforcement phase, It's not just the Illinois Department of Public Health, but the local departments of public health as well. With that, I think that we'll continue. We just want to make sure that we've got everybody admitted into who's, we don't want anybody waiting in the room.
There it is. It'll pop up.
Sorry. Cool. No, you're great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate everyone's patience also with the technology and what we're going to be doing here today. I am standing just because I hope that I know I'm going to be bringing more enthusiasm that way, although I've never been accused of being particularly enthusiastic. But I know certainly sitting in a dark office, it's going to be worse. So let's discuss the requirements going on to the next section, part two. First and foremost, how do we do this? How did this get back?
No, sir.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks for your patience. All right. The requirements. Wear a mask if you're not able to maintain a 6-foot social distance. We know that, but that's in the administrative rules. It's something you have to comply with. This includes when you're outdoors or indoors. This is for a business that's open to the public or with employees. So if you're operating your firm and you're not open to the public for purposes of walk-ins or anything along those lines, or you have a client who isn't, and it's essentially, let's say you have a client who's an accountant and your client is sitting in their office, they don't have staff coming in anymore or something, that's not obviously a facility open to the public. For bars and restaurants, you do have to wear a mask unless you're eating in or drinking. That's in the rules as well. And some of us who have eaten out have experienced that. Some places are better than others as far as enforcement, regardless of your point of view. But that's certainly something that's required as well. It's all about masks or social distancing or both. For schools, daycares, institutions of higher learning, et cetera, they have to maintain social distance and wear a mask unless, for example, playing a musical instrument or a school employee wearing a face shield. Again, just wanted to include that as far as those requirements. What are some specifics of complying when it comes to the specifics? Businesses, services, facilities, or organizations shall be in compliance if they take reasonable efforts to comply with that provision. What does reasonable efforts mean? It's left entirely undefined. So we're gonna be talking here as far as our compliance, some of the things that we could do in order to show reasonable efforts were anything ever to happen or anybody to get into trouble. Retail business compliance, however, is reasonable efforts is partially defined by the emergency rules. And they define that based on the totality of the circumstances. And that includes posting signage, requiring masks, providing masks, verbal warnings to wear masks, and if somebody refuses, ejecting a customer who refuses. Gatherings are are limited to 50 people or 50% of a building occupancy. For the vast majority of people, 50% of building occupancy is not going to be an issue. For the vast majority of our business clients, it's not going to be an issue because of the fact that we are already have restaurants, for example, that have tables socially distanced now. So the likelihood of meeting 50% of occupancy is going to be slim to none. And we are just a little bit ahead of schedule. If I'm going too fast, Mary, am I going too fast, or do you think everything is okay?
I think as far as I can
tell. I appreciate it. It's very tough reading an audience when they're not in front of you. So part three, let's discuss some enforcement issues. Enforcement here applies against a business, a service, a facility, or organization. There are two aspects fundamentally to enforcement. Enforcement gets broken up into two ways that enforcement applies. One is the investigation phase, and then the action or penalty phase of things. It is important to note that these emergency regulations specifically provide that they are not to be enforced against individuals. They're enforceable against the business entity itself. And that, keep in mind, that business entity could be your firm. So, but that's something that to keep in mind, that even if it's a sole proprietorship, you have any citation, any problem that you might have, it'll be the business having that problem, at least under the emergency rules. So the first part of enforcement is the investigation, and then we get into the action punishment phase. In the investigation phase, the department or unit of local health department personnel will investigate. Law enforcement, that being police, county deputies, state troopers, are specifically authorized to aid in the enforcement of these provisions. Those individuals who have to comply with the investigation are required, that is to say, compliance with the investigation is required of any business owner or person in charge of the establishment after two or more suspected cases of positive tests for COVID-19. So that somebody with two positive cases could get a knock on the door, and it's somebody from the health department, and they say that they want to conduct their investigation, and the person who's in charge at that time may very well have to allow or may very well have to comply, or else they could find themselves in trouble or the business in trouble. So what is cooperation here? It includes submitting specimens. It includes helping with contact tracing. It includes release of information and inspection of records. That's specifically provided for in the rules. So that brings me to an interesting ethical issue, because are the rules, the ethical limitations or ethical requirements for our profession have not changed as far as disclosure of confidential client information or even disclosure of a client. In that context, I think if there were firms that had two or more positive cases, I think there might be very well issues that could very well come up for any number of us in relation to, I'm going to make Kathy credit, in relation to, are we going to be in full compliance when we say, no, you're not going through our calendars, because we're not disclosing who our clients are. We're not allowed to do that. Of course, there are exceptions and emergency circumstances to everything, but none of us want to make put ourselves or our clients in any position that would in any way sacrifice their interests. That is the investigation phase. We go on to action penalty. Now, this is the action penalty under the emergency rules, because the regular administrative rules, that is the already standing administrative rules that are non-emergency, have different provisions that could also apply to businesses during this time, even when an emergency rule is present. For action or penalty under the emergency rules, they are allowed to give written notice to you with reasonable opportunity to take prompt action. So what is reasonable opportunity? It really depends on the facts and circumstances, and that includes the nature of the activity, whether it's indoors or outdoors, the public health risk of exposure, and the size of the building or crowd. Certainly, to use that example of your law firm that has two or more positive cases, the nature of the activity is limited to that firm. But there are also issues that we're going to talk about later involving anybody going to court, certainly. Obviously, whether it's indoors or outdoors, think of that outdoor gathering. They can issue a written warning for that. If there's noncompliance, then they can give an order to disperse until compliance is reached. And if there's noncompliance with an order to disperse, then there's a Class A misdemeanor violation. And again, that's against the business, not the individual, but I certainly wouldn't want my firm or business that we represent to be one of them that is cited. We all probably heard about Cadillac Jacks and the issues that they have had. There are supporters and detractors of Cadillac Jacks. I don't know in the long run that any publicity in that context is a good thing. It is also important, and I just want to reference the handout here. I know it's rather lengthy. That's why I included a table of contents to it. In that table of contents, it's the second page after the cover page, you'll see sample notices for noncompliance, as well as orders to disperse, if you want to look at that. And the numbers are paged, or that is to say, the pages are numbered so that you can reference that. Further action or penalty under the emergency rules. Other potential misdemeanor violations of that statute that's cited there on the screen, 20 ILCS 2305/8.1. That statute is also in the handout if you want to look at it for yourselves. Any repeated or continued violations after receiving two or more notices. So obviously that speaks for itself. Repeated or continued violations after two or more orders to disperse. So long story short, if you get two or more notices or two or more orders to disperse, the business can be held accountable and possibly for a Class A misdemeanor violation of Illinois law. Certainly not something that any of us wants. When it comes to then the deciding what is a failure to comply And again, this goes to advising your clients, not to mention managing your own firms, as far as what, how do they decide a failure to comply? They look to reasonable efforts. Reasonable efforts and such a, include things like wearing masks, whether or not social distancing is possible. They do not provide in the emergency rules any guidance as to what reasonable efforts are for businesses. They do provide guidance for retail businesses. And in those rules, they cite that reasonable efforts can be found for retail businesses and include such things as posting signage, providing masks, giving verbal warnings, and requesting customers leave. That should sound very familiar to you because that is the same thing referenced for retail businesses earlier. And it's something that we're going to be bringing up and discussing later as well. When it comes to then the action penalty under the emergency regulations, we all know the Class A misdemeanor violations. Now we have non-emergency regulations, but before we get going there, I'm going to go back a second. I'm going to inquire, make sure that nobody has any questions or anything at this point. If we have any questions, please let me know.
I don't see any questions in the queue, Brendan.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. When it comes to then action or penalty phase for non-emergency rules, that's where things can get really scary. Not that it's not scary enough that you or a client's business can be cited for a misdemeanor violation of an emergency rule of all things, but those standing administrative rules cover isolation, forced quarantine, and forced closure. Not something that any of us want to find ourselves or our clients in a position of having to face. The health department can order mandatory quarantine and closure if, in their reasonable judgment, it's determined action is required. And they can base that decision on a reason to suspect infection, the exposure or contamination, belief that serious and imminent threat to public health and safety is posed, and they first made written efforts to obtain voluntary compliance. Hopefully nothing ever comes to that, but certainly it is possible that a business could find themselves in non-compliance, and now they're looking to the reasonable judgment in the hopes that they are not a closed facility. Nobody wants to close their doors. And frankly, the health department, although they can order closure, a lot of businesses could be closed effectively were mandatory quarantine or quarantine or isolation to be ordered. So imagine a business that has two or more positive cases and the other members of that business, because they came in contact with individuals who are positive, were ordered to quarantine for 14 days or 10 days, depending on what you look at. And a lot of businesses might be a tantamount to an emergency closure in that instance. Certainly something that we need to avoid, and certainly that we have to advise our clients that they must be in compliance with. At all points, if you haven't gotten already, at all points so far, you've probably realized cooperation is key. I think that it's important to note that cooperation is not just mandated, but it's probably the likeliest way to avoid forgetting any misdemeanor violation, but avoiding a forced closure in the worst case. In addition to that, we have to advise, obviously, our clients to cooperate, or else they'd be in violation of Illinois law. We don't want to see that happen, but it's important to know what those requirements are. For the non-emergency regulations involving isolation, quarantine, and closure, that period cannot exceed the incubation or communicability period. For those of you wondering, the regulations I'm referencing also for non-emergencies or emergencies are also included in that handout if you want to look at yourself. And they're covered in the regulations under communicable diseases if you want to look them up independently. Now, they can issue a verbal order if there is a risk to public health. However, that verbal order is only going to be good for 24 hours. It has to be followed by a written order, and it can be enforced by a first responder until a written order is complete. first responder here could literally mean a first responder, or it could mean a representative of the health department. So that's an important thing to also keep in mind, that a business could be verbally told you must quarantine, or a member of that business could be told you must quarantine, or try to maintain a forced closure of a business based on a verbal order, or only, which is only good for a limited time, but that's something that you and your clients need to be made aware of if somebody were to come knocking. For non-emergency regulations then, what does the written order have to provide? Here we've got a list of things, obviously the identity of the business, the premises, the address of the business. There must be a notice that a business does have a right to counsel and to appoint a counsel if they are indigent. I find that interesting. I'm sure so many of you probably do as well. But I think that has to deal with the emergency nature. That is to say, the non-emergency regulations that address communicable diseases in an emergency context, if that makes sense. They also have to give the reason for the order, as well as notice of when, whether it's effective immediately or not. Notice of the anticipated time frame for the action that is taken. And that written notice has to include a statement of the measures that are taken to seek voluntary compliance, as well as a statement on the medical basis on which the order is justified. And finally, it has to include a statement that a person may refuse examination, as well as a statement that a hearing can be requested. If there is an immediate order issued without consent or court order, then within 48 hours, or in the stat, and the regulation provides, or as soon as reasonably possible, obviously kind of for holidays and weekends, then the authority has to file a petition in the circuit court. That petition must have a declaration of facts specific to what they're seeking, as far as the closure, quarantine, etc. And it has to specify very similar things: the identity of the business, the premises, the reason, the date and time when it's to commence, and the anticipated duration of the order they're seeking, as well as measures taken to obtain consent or risk of serious harm if consent is not sought, and the medical basis upon which the action is justified. Now, a lot of this might surprise you, but again, I think that if you look at those materials in the handout, you realize this is no kidding matter. This is something that absolutely the health officials could do for purposes of if there were an emergency. Previously, I referenced that you could have two or more positive cases, but what happens if you have an outbreak? What happens? Could the health department come in and close, for example, ISU? And the answer is absolutely yes. Now, that does apply to schools, so it is a little bit of an exception there. However, certainly if you have, let's say, a pizza, you have a client who owns a pizza business near ISU's campus, and they've had a significant outbreak of people, then emergency action could be taken, and you might find yourself in a late afternoon reading a written order that has, or a written petition that has been, somebody's taken a screenshot of or something, or picture of, and emailed to you. Again, for those non-emergency orders, non-emergency rate actions and penalties, for purposes of the petition in the circuit court, they do have to provide at least 24 hours notice before a hearing in the circuit court notice. It doesn't allow you or your client a whole lot of time to prepare. It doesn't allow you or your client a whole lot of time to show reasonable efforts for purposes of compliance or what steps you might take to avoid a closure. And that's one reason for the CLE, so that everybody is made aware, so that everybody knows, so that hopefully some things can be done ahead of time. As to that hearing that to be held in the circuit clerk's office, the burden is by clear and convincing evidence. And they have to be able to prove that either if it's an individual person that they're seeking quarantine of, for example, that the person has or is suspected of being exposed, or if it's a business, specific location, that location comes with a significant amount of activity that is likely to spread disease. And again, how do you rebut that? How do you show that? Again, what reasonable efforts that were referenced in the emergency rules have you taken in the context of these non-emergency rules to be able to show that this business is not likely to spread disease, for example, to be able to show that if an individual that you have not been exposed, or alternatively, that if you were exposed, that you since sought testing, et cetera, and so on. But they also have to prove that all other reasonable means have been exhausted. Certainly in the instance of a health crisis, to whatever extent, the health department and its representatives are going to be seeking to get compliance, to be seeking to avoid. I don't think that anybody is particularly interested in closing down businesses of any stripe. However, at the same time, it's very important that we, that are ahead of this, essentially, as business owners, for purposes of being able to show everything that we've done, not just to be in compliance, but fundamentally to prevent the spread of that of COVID-19 or of any communicable disease under these non-emergency regulations to ourselves, the members of our staff, other employees, people who service the industry. You might have somebody who owns a business or a client, represent a client who owns a business, and there's been lots of protocols taken for purposes of working 6 feet apart, et cetera, and so on, or alternatively wearing masks, but they have a cleaning crew that comes in every night to clean the place. And those individuals are not subject to those same protocols, or the business is not being dutiful in making sure that those same individuals practice the kinds of procedures that you might practice during regular business hours. In addition, as far as that hearing, the court, it's in the non-emergency rules. A lot of people might be surprised to hear this, but when considering a petition for purposes of forced isolation, quarantine, or closure, courts are specifically allowed to consider IDPH rules and recommendations from the CDC as well as the WHO. I think that a lot of us would probably be surprised to learn of that, but it is, at the end of the day, you have to familiarize yourself with those recommendations, and we do go into recommendations later on. Finally, the circuit court order, if entered, can last for 30 days. It can be extended another 30 days filing a petition. That petition has to show a reasonable basis to continue in order to prevent a serious and imminent threat to health and safety. Certainly, if they order the closure of a business, I mean, if you take examples here in town of restaurants that have, I don't think that a lot of these restaurants have all closed voluntarily. I want to make that absolutely clear. So hypothetically, if a restaurant had a number of employees that worked every single day, and those employees tested positive, and then they had more additional employees test positive, and then they chose to shut down in order to leave the facility for 24, 48 hours, then come in and do a complete sanitation of everything, and then to reopen their shop. Though all of those efforts are very good efforts for purposes of preventing anybody from being able to say that there is any kind of serious or imminent threat to health or safety when nobody who's positive is coming in and the entire place has been sanitized and cleaned.
Question?
Oh, yes. Any questions at all?
So there are none in the queue. You're doing such a good job of explaining. They have no questions for you.
All right. Well, I'm trying to slow down a little bit because I want to make sure we get everything, but I also want to make sure that we have time for questions later if there are any.
Can I make a quick comment?
Please.
Sure. So when you're talking about orders being issued by the circuit court, I will let everybody know we've talked about that procedure here in the building. To my knowledge, we haven't issued any. We are expecting those petitions to come through the state's attorney's office, most likely. And then Judge Lawrence has been the designated judge to handle those if they do come through this building.
Thank you, Judge Foley. Are there, as far as notice, is there anything? I'm just out of curiosity, if you're aware if anybody has talked with the Sheriff's Department as far as serving notice or anything? Has there been any conversations like that or no?
I haven't heard anything about that, but that doesn't mean that there hasn't been.
I just didn't know if you had heard anything. That's why I was curious as well. And I think that, and I think that that is, you know, one thing I in talking with some people, there was an individual I spoke with not too long ago who emphasized to me that reportedly health departments are not planning, even though these rules and regulations are in effect, that it's going to take a whole bunch of violations. And it's going to take a whole, you know, at the end of the day, if there are requirements that we have to comply with and we have to advise our clients comply with in order to be in compliance with the law as opposed to violating the law, it doesn't matter what the statistical likelihood is of the health department, you know, waiting until 5 cases or something. At the end of the day, we have to be in compliance, and we have to advise our clients to be in compliance as well. And part of that, as you saw earlier with the reference to reasonable efforts and in reference to being able to show that there is no danger, for example, posed to health or safety, whether serious, imminent or not, is, I think, in part, doing what you can to be able to demonstrate that you have gone, or your client has gone, above and beyond. Again, recall those requirements at the very beginning. And those requirements were wear a mask or maintain a social distance. And not very hard for many of us to comply with. However, in the instance, again, God forbid any of us ever suffer a scare where one of our employees or one of our client's employees comes down positive for COVID, then what happens? You need to have protocols in place for both for purposes of that employee not coming in, for purposes of protecting your existing employees, and for purposes of sanitizing and disinfecting your client's business for purposes of making sure that there is no additional spread, lest you face yourself having to have a discussion about what is compliance and what are reasonable efforts. We certainly don't want to see that for ourselves, and we certainly don't want to see that for any of our clients. Which brings me to part four, which is protecting your firm and your client's business. Fundamentally, like I said, the goal for any business, I don't care whether it's a law firm or a restaurant or anything else, you don't want to be cited for a misdemeanor. You want to be in compliance with the law. You want to avoid mandated isolation, quarantine, or closure. You don't want that to happen. And fundamentally, the best way to do that is to protect your business, protect your client's business, and comply with the requirements that are listed in part two. And part of that compliance is being able to show reasonable efforts have been made. So the best way to ensure that reasonable efforts have been made fundamentally breaks down to three things. Refer to those emergency rules, follow recommendations to avoid infection, follow recommendations on protocols after infection occurs. And those recommendations, and I included this specifically, even though this doesn't necessarily, although the emergency rules are part of this, a lot of those recommendations you'll see later on if you haven't had a chance to look through the handout yet, a lot of those recommendations come from the Department of Public Health or come from the CDC. And they're not written in an administrative rule. They're subject to change. We've witnessed ourselves just in the last few months, several changes to what is recommended, what is not recommended. But following those recommendations, I think, is important for purposes of being able to establish not just compliance, but reasonable efforts to comply, as well as to prevent any issues in the future, for God forbid somebody to become infected, somebody becomes sick. So we go first to the emergency rules. Recall that reasonable efforts for retail businesses included posting signage that requires masks. Now, I would note, and I don't know, I think some other attorneys I've talked with, depending on the industry that you're in, there is no limit on the amount of signs you can post. And a lot of us have visited businesses or frequent businesses, and one of the things that we routinely see are not just signs requiring masks, but signs also notifying employees and or visitors here about, for example, these are symptoms of COVID-19. If you're experiencing any of these, do not come in or leave right away. I've seen businesses that are posting in bathrooms, not just signs about advising on proper hand washing, but also reiterating symptoms of COVID-19. You can read that, well, with the idea being in mind that you can read that while washing your hands. Might seem like overkill, But if, God forbid, your firm or a business that you represent were ever given one of those written orders, overkill is probably something that you'd welcome at that point. But certainly posting signage requiring masks is referenced for retail businesses showing reasonable efforts. Providing masks. If your firm is open to the public or your client's business is open to the public and you don't have a stack of masks sitting at the front, I don't really know why you wouldn't. And one of the first things we did was provide masks to all of our, as soon as masks were available, provide masks to every single person who works for us, as well as at the front of the office. So anybody coming in or anybody who has a mask break, I don't know about you, but not all masks are made equal, and especially those three-ply surgical masks, I can't tell you many times it's broken, and because especially early on, I didn't have an extra one, I'm now poking a hole through it to try to tie the elastic around it so I can go in someplace. But always have extras ready to go, we'll always provide them. And I think of providing them to your employees is just part of your business's compliance, but also part of the reasonable efforts, obviously, to show that not just are we providing them to the public at large, but we're also providing them to anybody internally. You know, God forbid they have a mask break or what have you. Giving verbal warnings to customers who refuse to wear masks. It's interesting because this is referenced in the emergency rules under reasonable efforts that retail businesses can make, but you're probably all aware that the CDC came out, I think it was 2 weeks ago, to advise that it is not, that to advise against getting in any kind of confrontation with somebody who is not wearing a mask. That it probably should go without saying, hopefully, that getting in yelling matches in a store is not something that certainly we would tolerate, or I imagine any of us would tolerate at your firms. However, there's a fine line between giving verbal warnings to customers and getting in a yelling match. My best suggestion as far as that goes, and this kind of relates to the next point as far as them leaving as well, my best suggestion is when instructing somebody, that's not a negotiation. You are in compliance or you're not. You're wearing a mask or you're not. We're not discussing it. You can yell it to the top of your lungs from the sidewalk, bye. But part of being able to give verbal warnings and part of the last part here of requesting customers to leave if they're not in compliance or not wearing masks inherently requires the authority to do so. The businesses that you represent or advise, that is, as well as your own firms, your staff needs to be able to know that they are empowered to be able to tell people, leave, turn around, go. They need to be, I think it's important to make that absolutely explicit because, again, it's part of this, yeah, it's absolutely a big part of the whole idea of this hour here that we have together is being able to protect our businesses and being able to protect our clients' businesses. But there's also fundamentally the health of the people that we love, that we work with, and hopefully love. part of that is making, anybody can walk in off the street, that's fine. Here's a minimal requirement, put this mask on. You don't have one, we've got one for you. You refuse to put it on, goodbye. We had somebody, I was telling Mary earlier today, we had somebody just, yesterday in fact, refused to come into the office with a mask on and said, if I'm hiring a lawyer and I'm going to be paying this attorney money, then I'll be damned if I, literally verbatim, I'll be damned if I do it with a mask on. And we said, God bless you. I'm sure there's plenty of lawyers that will agree with us and some won't. And whatever you want to do is fine, but you're not coming here. And that's how it is, period. There's no discussion there. So then we get to the recommendations to avoid infection. And these go to both the CDC as well as the Illinois Department of Public Health recommendations. First off, if you can, from a business perspective, increase physical space between employees or create barriers using physical signs or cues. We bought, and I'm sure that a lot of you probably have bought, those spit shields that we see in a lot of businesses. And we have that for our front reception area for a reason. Walking in, people might not see a mask. Somebody might be in poor sight or something, but we've got that shield there. And again, what are reasonable efforts? Again, this is what we're talking about. Follow the recommendations to avoid infection, create barriers if at all possible, or increase physical space. You want to clean and disinfect at least once per day. Probably everybody knows that by now. Probably all of us are following that rule by now, and probably we've advised our clients to follow that rule as well. We want to have equipment on hand that's available to employees. And again, this is about reasonable efforts to be able to show, God forbid, something were to happen. But it's also just common sense. In fact, if you look at some of the CDC recommendations, there's actually a recommendation in there that you provide for, well, I forget exactly the phrasing, but it was providing like scheduling times for hand washing by employees, in addition to any other times that they might be washing their hands throughout the day. I wonder whether or not that's overkill, but at the same time, providing the equipment, like certainly hand sanitizer or the disinfectant to disinfect areas, and a thermometer to monitor their temperature, because that relates to symptoms, I think is important. If an employee comes in, they're not feeling well, but they're not really showing symptoms, have a thermometer available so that they can take their temperature, and they might very well have a temperature and need to go home. Protect yourself, protect your business. Then there are additional protections, steps to take to protect employees that are at higher risk, such as allowing that are recommended, like allowing people to work from home, providing additional supplies for sanitizing or disinfecting, or requiring PPE. Interestingly, there are not rules related to any additional protections for employees who themselves may not be at higher risk, but who have immediate family who are at higher risk. And that's something that I think is important to think about. I don't know, obviously, it's tougher the larger business that you have. But if you have an employee whose child or loved one or relative is at higher risk, whether because of age or disease or some other condition, I don't think that it hurts certainly to provide that employee extra PPE, extra ability to sanitize and disinfect and so on. So, recommendations on avoiding infections. Here, there's the hierarchy of controls. I will note this is also in the handout, and it's on one of the last pages that is included in the CDC guidelines. And here in this, they take you through the least effective means to the most effective means. Elimination, obviously, being most effective, kind of no duh. But hopefully, this gives people a sense of things that they can implement for purposes of avoiding the hazard altogether. Recommendations to avoid infection. There are mandatory screening of employees as something to think about. However, it's important to note that is optional in the state of Illinois. There is no mandatory screening. We've heard of, I'm sure, the stories of certain businesses that anybody, well, here in the courthouse, we walk in, it checks to see, the machine tests to see if you have your mask on, it takes your temperature to make sure you're not running a temperature. Mandatory screening is fine. But that's not required of you to do as an employer or of your clients to do as an employer. In addition, it's important to know recommendations have shifted from testing to a symptom-based approach. We probably all know that the CDC, okay, now we're going to from testing to symptoms. But it's important to keep in mind as attorneys that at least here for McLean County, there's a judicial, 11th Judicial Circuit order that prohibits entry if you have had contact with a person that has tested positive for COVID-19 and are awaiting your COVID-19 test result. There's a presumption in there you will be tested if you're alerted that you had contact with somebody who tested positive. And I think there's an obligation that, and I ran into this myself, in all frankness, a couple weeks back, I was alerted that I had come in contact with somebody who tested positive. I think it was Sunday night. I emailed, you know, judicial secretaries and assistant state's attorneys, and they were great. Everybody across the board was great. And luckily, my test results came back really quickly. I was negative, no problems. And that person went on to get a second test and turned out to be negative as well. But, you know, knock on wood. And then I guess the third, I'm not sure after that. But but everybody has been great. And in that instance, you've got to be in compliance with the court order. I don't think anybody's going to give you any kind of grief. And certainly everybody I dealt with for that, whether it be judicial staff or the assistant state's attorneys, they were terrific to deal with. And it went very smoothly without any issues after that. One of the other things, I actually was asked this by somebody about whether or not to require a doctor's note before allowing an employee to come back. Let's say we're an employee to test positive. The answer is no. It's not recommended in the state of Illinois either, by any agency, quite frankly, even the CDC. So what are some recommendations or protocols after infection occurs? So those are all recommendations to avoid infection. Recommendation after infection occurs. And again, this is a cumulative of both IDPH and CDC guidelines here, so that we can show reasonable effort. So God forbid something to happen and representative of the health department knock on our door or the door of a client's business, we're able to say, here are all the efforts that we've made. Because we are in a symptoms-based approach, a lot of this now is going to deal with symptoms as opposed to positive tests. Positive tests speak for themselves, be tested yourself, you come to contact, etc. But for symptoms-based, here we have the symptoms of COVID-19, fevers, chills, cough, muscle aches, fatigue, shortness of breath, sore throat, congestion, runny nose, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. I don't like the symptoms-based approach only because of the fact that a lot of these symptoms are indicative of somebody with a cold or somebody, with something else. But your average cold, you're going to have a runny nose. You might have a sore throat as a result. And it's unfortunate, but in that instance, it's not a bad idea in this culture, in this climate, to be tested for COVID-19. Better to be tested than to get others sick. In an ideal world, nobody would be bringing illness to the office in any context. Unfortunately, this is not an ideal world or an ideal situation we have to deal with. One symptom I did not touch on is the new loss of taste or smell. And that is listed in that list of symptoms. And it is emphasized, the new loss of taste or smell. If you had or somebody had COVID-19 in March, they're over it now, they test negative, they could still be exhibiting or experiencing a loss of taste or smell months later. So that's why it's emphasized on a new loss of taste or smell. Recommendations and protocols continued. So if an employee has symptoms, what do you do? In that instance, the employer has to allow that, tell that person that they can't work. They have to close, it's recommended that you close off areas that the employee used for prolonged periods of time. Wait 24 hours and then clean and disinfect after that. There's also, interestingly, I think it's in the CDC as opposed to IDPH guidelines, as far as community-related exposure. So let's say you have a five-person staff in your firm. One of them experiences symptoms. You tell that person, okay, thanks for letting me know. You're not allowed to come into work tomorrow. Go get tested. Let us know what the results are, if you know you're comfortable, etc. They have, one of the things is close contact being defined then as being less than 6 feet from somebody for 15 minutes or more. Then those persons also are recommended to stay home for 14 days to self-monitor for symptoms and avoid contact with others. And I find that interesting. I can't find a whole lot of information out about where the within 6 feet, and again, without reference to a mask being on, but within 6 feet of somebody for 15 minutes or more. Again, that goes to one of the earlier recommendations related to create distance between employees, if at all possible, or put up a physical barrier between them so that you don't find yourself wondering, well, is this 5.5 feet? And were you at the copier for 14 minutes and not 15? Now, if an employee has symptoms, that employee obviously shouldn't come in. It's recommended they isolate for 14 days, monitor their symptoms, and monitor the temperature. It is recommended that they return to work if it's been at least 10 days since symptoms first appeared, or if it's been at least 24 hours since they've had a fever and their symptoms have improved. And that is an and. In other words, in the recommendations, those three things are all combined for purposes of self-determination of when an employee is healthy enough, if you will, to come back. All right, so we are at 12:48 and we're at a questions phase. I don't know if anybody has any questions for me at this point whatsoever.
Brendan, there are none typed in the queue, so if you want them to unmute and ask.
Sure. If anyone has questions, they're welcome to unmute. No, it doesn't look like. Mary, I think you said that you had something.
I had a couple. Are they still testing? Do you know? Out at the fairgrounds?
Yes, to my knowledge, they're still testing out at the fairgrounds here in town. There was rapid testing available in Gibson City, at the Gibson City Area Hospital. And it was rapid testing. It was, they promised within 24 hours, but a lot of people had it within just a few hours. They closed that facility as of September 10th. I actually spoke with a couple people at the Gibson City Area Hospital who told me that, each of those individuals, they blamed universities for opening for the reason of their closure, but just because of increased testing and increased people in the community over, just flooding into the system. But there is, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any place that has a rapid test available locally for us. However, they're still testing out at the Interstate Center. And that test actually, I've had some people who have heard well within 24 hours back that they're negative and they're good to go and they haven't had any problems. So even though it's not a rapid test, you can get your results back rapidly, if that makes sense.
Okay. Second question, I guess, while I have the attention, and feel free to pop in, anybody, if you have your questions out there. I don't want to monopolize here, but does this rule, would this also apply to the local public library as well?
Well, I think so, as far as I think it's entirely possible, because there are certain provisions, but if you look at the emergency rules, for example, it doesn't contemplate that this is a private business necessarily versus a public entity. Okay. And if you look at the non-emergency rules, it specifically covers organizations. So I think it would include not-for-profits, it would include libraries, it would include civic areas where more than a certain number of people could gather, certainly. That's an interesting question, actually.
Well, and what prompted me to ask that is because they were giving... when we took a tour before they opened, they were going to give their patrons a choice whether they apply the mask or not. And I'm like going, it's not at the courthouse. You don't have a mask. You don't get in.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to share this information with them to see if they...
The only thing I can think of is that, again, if you look at the requirements and the PowerPoint there and at the some of the provisions, the requirements are to wear a mask if you're unable to maintain that 6-foot social distance.
Okay.
So maybe that the reasoning for that is, I mean, I've certainly been in libraries that were very busy, and I've certainly been in libraries that where it was the employees and me. I could see somebody coming in and reading a book, but... because there's nobody around, there's no need to wear a mask in that context. But it is a slippery, it is easy to go from a 6-foot social distance without a mask to within 6 feet, and now masks are required. And I think that's one reason a lot of businesses are requiring masks just as a blanket rule, because you know, entering into a store, you might very well have no problem maintaining a 6-foot social distance, but it's could be next to impossible to maintain that or not come within 6 feet of somebody after that. And that's why I found that within that regulation, their recommendation about the 6 feet for 15 minutes or more, because it's not a recommendation that any, you know, that has been adopted as far as any of the regulations in the state of Illinois. And it makes sense if you pass somebody and it is literally in passing, you're going upstairs, they're going downstairs. Certainly you could become infected. It is a momentary, passing where you're just for a brief moment within 6 feet of another person. However, that certainly during that moment, you could become infected with COVID. You could pass that along. And so I think a lot of businesses are just to prevent that, just saying wear a mask.
Makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions on anything at all? No?
Ask them for stories in their firms if they have anything.
Anybody who's listening have any similar experiences or anybody run into anything from one of their clients, maybe without violating any kind of confidentiality? Have anybody have any clients who brought this up to you or saw your advice from this? I don't see anyone unmuting anything. Hopefully not. Hopefully everything is okay, and hopefully there are no instances. And again, one of the things I think for attorneys that we have to be particularly aware of or particularly cognizant of is that standing order, because you might have if you have a firm with a couple of people working with you, one of them tests positive, or one of a big question that with schools opening, I think, is what happens when an employee's child winds up testing positive. Now, your employee hasn't tested positive yet. You haven't come into contact with that person's child, but what do you tell that employee as far as staying home? And what do you tell it, and what would happen in the instance that that employee were to come to work, maybe while they're waiting on their test, and then it turns out they're positive as well. And now you're faced and have a special obligation to ensure that you don't enter into the building while you're awaiting your own result. And that's why, because of that obligation, because we certainly want to avoid, I think, as law firms or any business, really, we want to avoid any kind of work stoppage, whether that's because we're not allowed to come in a building or that's because our staff is out having tested positive. Better to play it safe than sorry. Better to give all of your employees the extra means they need to sanitize both the office facility as well as to sanitize their hands and so on and so forth. Not to mention have protocols in place for protecting them and protecting your firm and others at it for purposes of ensuring that nobody comes to work if they've had contact with somebody who's positive. And that might mean that work suffers or not as much gets done. But if that's what it means, it's certainly better than a closure because you don't have anyone who can come in because you're all positive. Makes sense, I'm sure. Michelle, I saw that you were unmuted. Did you have anything? I'm guessing not. I know that those of you who are attending and work in the building here have had a lot of things, obviously that you have to comply with. I have not. I don't know, Mary, maybe you could tell me. For instance, if you're an assistant state's attorney, you've got a key to the building, you have to do warrants, you have to do all kinds of things. You're coming on the weekend for weekend court. I assume they're still requiring wearing a mask on anytime anybody comes in, regardless of time or day, right?
Yeah, and that's correct. We did have a scare in the law library where a student was not feeling well, went and got tested, and the next day she had those results. Or I guess it was over the weekend. And so we worked through that, followed the protocols from the CDC, Chief Judge Ann Will Scanlon, and they guided us through it. Thank heavens no one else got infected, and we were able to bring them back in the 14-day quarantine. And also, I will credit Jenna Kearns for the protocol that she put out there with her students or volunteers coming in through Justice Corps. That probably saved that group from being exposed because she was in the group. They did the mask, they did the hand washing, they did the all of the distancing that was needed and really prevented us from having a breakout here at the courthouse. So she deserves an awful lot of credit. And I think she's on today. So Jenna, if you have more to speak of that, you're welcome to pipe in here. But really she runs a tight ship, and we were able to only have one student ill, and I think she got the clearance to come back now.
That's great.
Yeah, but we do follow the CDC guidelines here closely. Chief Judge wants us to adhere to those. And though you see me without a mask, I probably should have one on right now, but we get lax, I guess.
You may not look at our video. We're further than 6 feet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Jenna, do you have anything on that? Just let me know, interrupt at any time. But I think that there are a lot of, that's exactly right. You have requirements and regulations in relation to contact and wearing of masks at all times and that kind of thing. I know for us, if somebody were to come in to the office for whatever there are, we've been blessed, lucky, a lot of clients have been understanding, a lot of clients have not had a problem with it. A lot of potential clients have not had a problem with it, and thank God, for that. But I think it's in today's culture, it's one thing that this isn't April of 2020. I think a lot of people are used to that. A lot of people are coming to businesses with masks in their pocket or ready to go, or extras in their car. I certainly, have extras, myself, I'm sure most of us do.
Well, the grocery stores require it, mm-hmm. I think, and so people just got in the routine. I will notice that it takes some coaching, though. People do come up at the law library and want to get very close, even now. And so I have to remind them, or I haven't been up there for the last couple of weeks, but I have to remind them, okay, just take a step back, and I'll be glad to help you, but just need to keep that distance in between. So
it's very difficult to maintain that when you're talking about things. Yes.
Jenna responded in the chat, so people can read what she had to say, but she noted she's had really good compliance with folks in the library. No one's had to raise their voices or get upset, and maybe it helps that it's a courthouse and not a restaurant or a bar or some other type of business that sounds like they've been pretty fortunate. Thanks, Jenna, for chiming in.
Thank you very much, Jenna. Really appreciate it. I think that is absolutely a big deal. Obviously, there's the nightmare scenario. Maybe some of you, I don't know if you have, there are lots of videos available either on Facebook or YouTube or elsewhere that just show people they're losing it. There's no other word for it. They're just losing it. And they're so irate about having to wear a mask. And fundamentally, at the end of the day, and that's why the CDC's recommendation about, okay, well, don't get in a fight with this person. Of course, nobody wants to get into a fight, but how do you inform in any patron you're not welcome anymore? And you tell them to leave. You tell them you're done. That's it. And whether it's over a mask or something else, as long as it's not discriminatory in nature, there's nothing wrong with doing that. But it's weird that these videos are out there. I mean, if you walked into a store and the store told you, I'm sorry, you have to leave now, for whatever reason, it didn't matter. It could be rational, irrational, again, as long as it's not discriminatory. We're closing early today, whatever it is. You would comply. You might be displeased, but you will still comply. And it seems like when it comes to wearing a mask and being told to leave, there's all these videos where it seems to incite people into yelling matches and screaming and all kinds of nightmare scenarios that you certainly wouldn't want in your business or your client's business. And in that instance, what do? How much pressure do you use for purposes of not allowing that person past a certain point until maybe law enforcement shows up to remove that person? So it is 1 o'clock. I don't know if there, it doesn't seem like anybody has any questions. Hopefully that's because everything was so succinct and well put together. I have a tendency to think not, but my email is on one of the last slides, as well as, you know, my address and phone number. So if anybody has any additional questions or follow-ups or runs into anything, please feel free to give me a call. I always appreciate an opportunity to talk. George, I don't know if you've got anything or no.
No, just to say thank you for the presentation today. For those of you on the presentation, if you haven't, look at his materials, print them out. They're really good. So, with that, just thank you, and everyone have a great rest of the great rest of your day.
Thank you very much, George. Appreciate it, and thank you everybody for attending. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care.
Now there's still people in the chat, so we'll always let people come and go as they want there. You can stop the recording if you want, if you have the ability there.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. Stop recording. Yeah.